Canceling plans because your knees hurt? Nope, not anymore. Get to Joint Relief Institute. Safe, fast, immediate pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
This is WGN Radio. John Williams here along with Emily Austin, who is an associate professor of classics and the college at the University of Chicago. Emily, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing what you do. You're an associate professor of classics. You are a scholar on Homer. You write about, I'm just reading from some biographical information about you, literary depictions of emotion and solitude in ancient Greece. All of that's correct?
That's right, yeah.
Boy, am I glad we found you. And just one quick question, though, about your scholarly work or your teaching. So you teach at the U of C. Do the students there have to read Homer? Is that part of the mandatory curriculum or no?
Well, it's the way we do our core curriculum, there's a lot of flexibility. They can choose between different sequences, but many of the sequences include Homer. So a lot of the students have read Homer.
And I think a lot of us were asked to read Homer, which is different than read Homer. And I think a lot of us and we know Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey by name, but maybe not in any detail. And you and I don't have time for a lot of detail here, but just tell me who Homer was and what the Odyssey was.
All right. So, well, that's kind of not a short question.
I know.
We have these two incredible poems, these giant epic poems. And we have some biographical tradition that says they were written by some guy, well, it's not written, sung by some guy named Homer, who probably did not have that name. I do happen to think that there was some sort of poet who put these together, but it is clearly the end of a long oral tradition of poetry composed in performance.
Interesting.
So you'd have a kind of basic story theme, and you'd have a whole tradition of performers who are also composers, I think. I mean, this is wildly contested, but this seems to be what's true, that the whole art of it was done live. And then somewhere towards the end of this tradition, we had nothing to do with it. But the tradition, someone in the tradition, I think, probably intervened to give us the massive, gorgeous poems that we have.
Right. So eventually it was put into word onto paper, if you will, or papyrus or whatever they had. But was it that they did not have a means to write these poems down 3,000 years ago? Or was it that people weren't literate, so it was just naturally done verbally?
That's a great question, because we don't have a totally clear time frame, but we don't have any evidence of written Greek that's as old as what we think the Iliad and Odyssey were. So, but I think that it's easy nowadays to think orality versus literacy as if literacy is in advance. And I think that what's really clear to me about the poetry of the Iliad and the Odyssey is that it's just a different kind of poetry. It's a different kind of art form. It's not that we're on some grand tradition of progress. Writing gives you ability to do something that you can't do without it, but oral tradition also gives you something that writing doesn't give you, which is the way it plays with repetition, basically, and the way repetition can be really meaningful, that you have these units. So I don't know. I think this is what's hard for a lot of people when they have to read it in class. It's like, they're like, why is Agamemnon flowing-haired Agamemnon? You know, why is Achilles swift-footed Achilles? And this stuff gets in your way. Why do they repeat these scenes? But those actually, once you get used to it, are part of the meaning-making of this other art form.
It's their version of as previously seen on. So
yeah, exactly.
Tell your students I came up with that. But the story is that Odysseus goes away. He's gone for 10 years, then 10 more years to come back. In that time, we're wondering what happened to Penelope. Did she stay true to him and wait for him? And after fighting this war, then he finally comes back and, spoiler alert, falls into her arms and she has him back. Something along those lines, right?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Okay. It's all fiction, right? In fact, wasn't, and the Trojan War wasn't even a thing, right?
Certainly wasn't whatever the content of the Iliad and the Odyssey are. I mean, people have tried to identify a burning of a city around Troy that would make sense in that time period, but nothing that we have in these poems should be taken as history.
Yeah. And that's interesting because it probably won't surprise you to know that we sort of conflate some of these ancient figures who were real, Plato or Socrates, say, with some of these other people whose names we know, but we don't appreciate who's real and who's not. And then what would the purpose of this have been? If it was fiction back then, was it the equivalent of fiction today? That is, we just, tell stories about current events, and this was their version of that?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, it seems like there's a lot of things that literature can do, and I think it is, it's a long tradition of trying to understand what we're doing in the world and all of these questions through thinking about stories of other people being in the world. And I think it had that function. There is evidence, a little bit of evidence also, that maybe there's the beginning of a sense of Pan-Hellenism, not really, but a little bit of like maybe this is also about being Greek, wrestling with what it means to be Greek, but it's the age of heroes. So they're telling stories that would have
Yeah.
been before their own time. They're looking back to some kind of fictional past. Although I think the ancient Greeks didn't necessarily consider these to be fiction. But I mean, I think we draw those lines a little bit more clearly than they did.
Oh,
But
really?
these are the
Maybe it didn't matter to
stories.
them as much, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
So Matt Damon plays Odysseus, Anne Hathaway, his wife Penelope, Robert Pattinson is their son. Antinous, I may be pronouncing some of these names incorrectly.
Although not son, he's the main suitor. Antinous is the bad suitor.
Oh, yes, pardon me, pardon me. And it is interesting to me that maybe one of the reasons this show, this poem matters, why they would make a movie out of it all these years later, is because there are some contemporary themes that we can draw upon. For instance, the Trojan horse, right? That is still a thing in contemporary parlance, and that was a thing that I don't know if they invented that then, but what a clever idea and what an interesting expression it represents, right?
Totally. That was one of the aspects of the movie I was most impressed with, was how much they made that part of the storytelling of the movie,
Yeah,
that opening image of the horse.
and once I, and I'm almost inclined to say, was that true? Did that really happen? No, John, none of this happened. But at least, but at least it is true to the poem, right? It's true to Homer's version of the event, correct?
That's right. What's really interesting about this movie is a lot of the details of how Christopher Nolan's done the Trojan horse are details we have actually from Virgil's Aeneid. Because Virgil's trying to like say Romans are great too and come up with this epic that pulls back all the way back to the times of the Iliad and the Odyssey. And so he represents the sack of Troy. In the Odyssey, it's only represented in reported speech, like or in reported song. There are songs being sung about Odysseus as the guy who had this trick of the Trojan horse. But the details that the movie draws on, they got from the Aeneid, which I found really cool. I think one of the lines actually is straight from the Aeneid: honor the gods and respect their gifts. I have to check this because I keep saying it, but I was
Honor the
like, I
gods
think
and
that's
respect their
Virgil.
gifts. And you're getting to something that I'm wondering too, like, was this conceived as just great entertainment, or were they trying to teach us lessons? And if so, what were they? So I understand Beware a Trojan Horse, or I understand maybe a siren song means something even today. Were those invented by Homer or whoever authored this? And what are some of the lessons that we're supposed to learn? Or is it just swashbuckling entertainment and we should not try to read too much into it?
I love this question. I think it's a third kind of thing. It's neither reducible to like an aphorism, something you can say quickly, although there are those lines and they resonate in the context of the story, but nor is it just, sort of silly entertainment. It's grappling, I think, with really profound human questions, like how hard it is to come home. Well, first of all, the huge toll that war takes on your humanity, the devastation that is inflicted not only on the victims, but also the way that the perpetrators are, doing
there's
things
lines
that are...
in the movie, and the movie does talk about that. Sometimes it's just a line or two, but we had language, we had civilization, we had love, and now we've lost everything. That's the price you pay for war.
Yeah. And I think this is in Homer. Homer's never as explicit as we have to be when we tell stories today.
Yeah.
He does a lot of showing, but I think you can read a lot of this complexity into Homer just by the way he like will shift perspectives, reverse similes, all these kinds of things. It's always inviting you to look at things from a different point of view.
Well, am I supposed to learn anything from the Cyclops?
in Homer, yes. I don't know what you felt about the movie. In Homer, it really is a moment where you're like, Odysseus, why did you do that? Because he tells the Cyclops that his name is Odysseus. And that's a little bit muted, I think, in the movie. But you still have it in the anger of the crew for shooting the arrow, but you don't have that. But Odysseus himself, this is a really rare moment in Homer. In the Odyssey home, Odysseus later, when he's super, super angry about something that's going on in his home, he talks to his heart and he says, calm down. You endured worse in the cave of the Cyclops when you saw him killing all your men. So he himself thinks there's a lesson in self-restraint, biding your time.
Yeah, which he did not exercise in that scene. And so that's, beautiful on the screen, grotesque on the screen.
Yeah,
but boy, they sure did give you that scene and that whole scenario.
I love it.
What do you? So you, by the way, you liked the movie, did you?
I loved it. Yeah, I'm so surprised by how much I liked it.
I know, because I'm inclined to say, well, of course you liked it, but then again, maybe you would be the harshest of critics because you are more familiar with the source work. Helen of Troy, I don't care that she's portrayed in the movie by an African-American or Mexican-Kenyan woman, but do you care about the representation of any of the characters?
I don't. I mean, I guess I care insofar as it matters to the discourse. And it matters to real people, but I think it's completely reasonable to cast a diverse cast. The ancient Mediterranean world was not the sort of marble that has survived. We have this, I think, a kind of odd sense of color for the ancient world. And they didn't think about identity in terms of race in the way that we do. So,
And I hate to ask this, but do we even know the hue of their skin? I read that expectation is based on what we see in pottery, but the pottery might not actually reflect the actual image of these persons to the eye, and that the description of Helen as golden might be an aura rather than blonde hair. So we don't know, and it didn't matter.
It didn't matter, and I will say Homer is famously weak on describing color. There's very little color described in Homer anyway, to the point that some people think color meant something slightly different, the words for color. So yeah, it's reflecting our contemporary concerns, I think, that people are worried about this.
Well, okay, so one last thing then. I thought the movie was spectacular, or it was a spectacle. It was big, and I'm a fan of his anyway. Not Homer, Christopher Nolan, maybe Homer. But I was disappointed at this scene where Odysseus finally comes home to Penelope. I thought that was flat. I thought that was the point of this thing. And then they go, he's kind of hiding under a robe, and off they go. And so I thought they missed an opportunity there. Can you just comment on that?
Good. Yeah, maybe. I mean, the thing is, the whole movie, my brain is saying is like, are they going to include this? Are they going to include this? Are they going to include this? And I know they can't include everything. Yeah, there's so much more in that moment in the poem. I will say I'm a total sucker for the happy ending. This is a change, a radical change to the end of the Odyssey. But the end of the Odyssey is, I really hate it.
In the original Odyssey, it doesn't end well. And I'm sorry, everybody, in the movies, everything ends up fine for Penelope and Odysseus. That's not true to the source work?
So one of the changes that the movie makes is keeping Telemachus out of the fighting, so that Telemachus can stay and be king.
Yeah,
What you
the
have in the
son.
poem is Telemachus helps Odysseus, and they've killed all the young men of Ithaca. And I think there's a lot of ways to interpret that fact. But one of the consequences, Homer, he's much more clear on like that things lead to other things than he is on telling you whether they were good or bad. So a clear consequence of killing all the young men is a civil war. So the end of the Odyssey is that we're there on the brink of civil war, and the gods just intervene and they create a forgetting, an amnesty. And that's the end. It's just wildly
Wow.
unsatisfying. And then the other unsatisfying thing is that, and this is why Odysseus is portrayed the way he is subsequently. Another unsatisfying thing is that instead of going west with Penelope on the sea, he does have to do reparation to Poseidon, but he has to go inland. And you don't have any sense that Penelope goes with
No,
him. So
you'd
I loved the happy ending.
Emily Aus Hollywood.
I
Emily
know, I'm
Austin
a
is an
sucker.
associate professor of classics at the University of Chicago. We should visit more often, Emily. I'll bet your students are lucky to have somebody who makes it fun and contemporaneous like you do. I appreciate your help with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful talking to you.